This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, what a wonderful program I have today. At the bottom of the hour, I have a wonderful guest, Tim McGee. He is one of my favorite authors, certainly one of my favorite local authors, an amazing man. He's written a new book called Durkin's Journey, and I'm looking forward to talking to him about that. And he also wrote a book about D-Day, which I love, and it's been out for quite a while, but we're going to talk about that. But right now, I get to turn to somebody, wow, I admire so much, Eugenia Lovett West. Hi, how are you?
Oh, Patsy, it is such a joy to be with you again.
Wow, this is so amazing. And can I call you, your friends call you Jeannie?
Call me Jeannie, please.
Okay, because Eugenia is a full name, boy. I bet when you were young, people would go around, exactly, Jeannie's a great name, too.
It's a little easier than Eugenia.
It is. Well, this is so exciting because we are celebrating your birthday. And tell my listeners, what birthday is this?
It's on Sunday.
I know.
I'll be 99. I'll be in my 100th year, which I can hardly believe.
You are so amazing. I admire you so much. I talk about you often because, you know, I will get young people who will, you know, they're in their 20s. They say, oh, well, I tried to write a book. I can't write a book. I can't do it. And I say, yeah, well, get with the program. I mean, if Eugenia Lovett West can write a book about cybercrime, when she's in her 90s, and most young people don't know anything about cybercrime, and you wrote, you know, Firewall is such a great book. I thought, my goodness, how exciting to do that kind of research and write such a marvelous book.
Well, that was fun, but lately I've changed to doing historical novels set in the American Revolution, and the last novel that was published was called Sarah's War, 1777, and right now I'm working on the sequel to Sarah's War, which is, again, in the American Revolution, set in the next year, 1778, with a new cast of characters. And, Patsy, I just try so hard to get my readers to be immersed in that very dangerous time and care about these people who are, our country was not formed. It was divided between the patriots who wanted independence and the loyalists who wanted to stick to the king. And you wouldn't believe the espionage, the dirty tricks that were going on. So it's a kind of a fun book to write because the subtitle is Lovers and Spies in the American Revolution.
Oh, that's a great one because I love Sarah Champion. She is such a wonderful character. And when I was first read Sarah's War, I was just captured by your deep understanding of the Revolutionary War and what it meant and how it relates to today, that, you know, people really do need to know what they went through. This was not an easy time.
Oh, it was the most incredibly difficult time when you think. There was no structure. There was no president yet. All you had really was a Congress that sent representatives twice a year or so to Philadelphia, and And they, of course, it was like 13 little countries. They each wanted to protect their own little fiefdom. And it was just, for those men, those founding fathers and mothers, to form this country, it's just a miracle. You can hardly believe it happened, and you surely do not want to throw it away.
Exactly. And, of course, Sarah was a Parson's daughter, and I remember her brother was killed in the Battle of Long Island. And when she decided to do something about it, she didn't just sit there and mope around. She decided to get into the action, and her adventures as a spy on the British officers, it's a fascinating story.
Well, thank you. Those kind words are much appreciated.
And I think the dichotomy of that you show there of how the British were living, sort of a high life. They were partying, and they were dancing, and they were having festivities, and it was for them it was a game. They were coming over to play in America, and then for our people, the patriots who wanted something new, who wanted something to be free. Wow. You write it so beautifully.
Well, it was such a contrast. I mean, I just happened to read about these high-living British officers, and then the contrast of George Washington 20 miles away in Valley Forge, bleeding feet in the snow, everybody, half of his army either down with dysentery or deserting. Again, it's a miracle. It was a miracle that they survived.
It was, and I admire you so much, one, because your writing's so great, but also there's a lot of research in both of these books.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that's what half the fun of is sort of putting pieces of the puzzle together. Oh, yes, I mean, George Washington was, he was at Middlebrook at this time, or he was here and there, but I don't claim in any way to be a historian. I just have this one little, I work on this one little slice of life in those days. But it's fun trying to throw in the details, what the people were wearing. I have a marvelous old map of old Philadelphia, so I can take my characters from street to street and as all your writers know, it's the details that really can kind of make a book come alive. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge.
Well, the details are what give a book depth. And when you have depth, when you have all these different layers, you learn about what they eat, what they were wearing, where they were, the streets they were walking on. And for people who have been to Philadelphia, some of the streets are familiar. So it just layers the book, so you never get bored. There's always something new when you turn the page, something that you're going to learn, something that sort of opens your mind. That's why your books are so good.
Well, you do the best you can, and I'm just, you just try to have the reader understand what these people were going through, and it's not easy. And honestly, Patsy, this book that I'm working on, The Brave Ones, is much harder than Sarah's War, because there wasn't as much, as many pivotal, exciting events going on. You did have the downfall of Benedict Arnold. He comes into Philadelphia as a conquering, military hero, and he goes out as a traitor, one of the greatest traitors that this country has ever had. But I have to work so hard to make to enlarge these characters, do far more with them than I did in Sarah's War. So it's hard work, honey.
And you talked there about dirty tricks. What were some of the dirty tricks you discovered?
Well, it's just, you know, the spies will try to infiltrate Congress or a loyal or a patriot's home. There's a great deal of killing going on. There are these networks of spies that are sort of set up to get military information, and in some ways, you know, getting information and spying was more important than the military battles. Winning the information war was huge.
Well, I'm looking forward to this one. It's going to be great. I know it's going to be great. And, you know, it's just, you are such a marvel. And I want, somebody's going to come into the studio right now. And this is another author. And I'm inviting him in the studio. He's going to be talking to me a little later. But the reason I'm inviting him in, sit down, Tim McGee. I am talking to Eugenia Lovett West. It is her birthday. 99 years old.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. You go ahead and put on your microphone and you can join in the conversation. Because Tim wrote a book about, that's set, well, part of it is about D-Day. And there are not too many people around who still remember it. And so I want to just introduce you here, because Tim, his book really... My father, of course, was in D-Day, and you remember it.
Oh, vividly. You know, my husband, I was married in 1944 to a fighter pilot with the 8th Air Force who flew missions over Germany. Not too many, but because it was towards the end of the war, but a few. And, yeah, I mean, I was deeply involved in D-Day.
Wow,
that's amazing.
That is, and Tim, of course, his book is called Worthy McGuire, and it's about a veteran who goes back to, you know, relive and look for his lost love from D-Day, and it's a fascinating book, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and send it to you because I think you'll really enjoy it. But tell us a little bit more about that period of time. Where you were when you heard about what was happening, and you must have been pretty frightened.
Well, I was. I mean, I was very young. I mean, when we were married, it was a real war wedding, which lasted 60 years. I don't think our family thought it ever would, because we were both 20 when we got married. But so I was, of course, he was overseas, and I was living at home, and I was working for I'd worked for Harper's Bazaar, but then I decided that was a little too frothy for that time, so I was working for the American Red Cross, and so that's where I was. I was working for the American Red Cross, and just worried, you know. We were rationed. We were involved in the war effort, but no gas. You know, you had to your cars. You had to watch plan ahead where you were going to go, because you were very rationed for gasoline. But of course, we didn't have the terror, the dreadful bombings that Europe did. We were safe.
But you were listening to it about it on the radio?
Oh, yeah, because we didn't have television. We didn't have television until into the 50s after the war. I mean, everything was radio then, or newspapers, of course. I mean, newspapers were huge. That's really where you got most of your news from newspapers.
Well, your husband, of course, being a pilot, and you know my husband was a pilot. Pilots are very special people, aren't they?
Oh, they are. They are. Very brave.
Very, very brave. You know, so it's so exciting what, you know, all these years, and then you decided, you know, of course you were writing, you know, for magazines and things, but when you started writing novels, that was an exciting turning point in your life.
Well, it was. I mean, I started out being a journalist, doing, you know, freelancing for local papers. But then you get to a point where you think, 300 words about the, you know, the Tuesday night at the sewage.
Make that interesting. Yeah.
And so why not, you know, why not try to write? So I wrote my first novel, which was absolute trash, you know, into the wastebasket. But then the second one was, again, a historical novel set in Jamaica, and that was picked up by Doubleday. And that had to be one of the most exciting moments of my life, you know, to finally, you know, be published.
And then, of course, you went on and wrote a wonderful mystery series, Emma Street Mystery, about a former opera singer, which, again, that was an unusual character and wonderful character.
Well, she was as real to me as one of my own daughters. You know, I was very fond of Emma, and I kind of miss her. But I love Sarah, and I now love Louisa, who's my main protagonist. But I'm at heart, I like to be a page turner, so I'm sort of struggle to keep everything moving fast. I don't know whether Tim, what's your read on that? Do you try to keep everything moving fast, or what?
I do. I try to. I write scenes, and I try to make sure that they're germane to the story. Sometimes they aren't, and they don't make it, but. Try to keep the interest and keep the storyline moving along as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Well, isn't it wonderful when characters take over your life? I mean, very much like with Tim, his character Worthy McGuire not only took over his life. To tell you the truth, I have never forgotten Worthy McGuire. I think of him often, and I think of Sarah often, particularly when there is talk about George Washington and about you know, the Revolutionary War, and they want to tear down statues, they want to, you know, get rid of this, they want to get rid of that, and I think about Sarah, and I think about a woman like that you created. And once you create somebody like that, they do become like so real. I can envision what Sarah is doing, and how she would feel about people tearing down statues of it would be unbelievable.
Yeah, well, that's what writers try to do. We try to make those characters believable, and sometimes they get into situations. Again, I'm sure Tim has dealt with this, where you have to try to make the incredible credible, you know, and make the stretch, because for the poor reader, you know, when you put these characters into something that's pretty wild, and to make it credible for the reader is tough.
Yeah, I agree. It's sometimes when I write a scene or think about something, it happens that way, where I, can this happen? And hopefully, can I make it more interesting? And when does it become too much? You know, but you write that fine line.
Exactly.
And you come out with the characters, and they become a part of you.
Absolutely.
Very much so. I often say Worthy was my first book, and I often think, you know, I do, what would Worthy do? Kind of in the back of my head.
mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't do it because it would be a bad outcome.
And of course, Emma Street, one of the reasons I loved it was because she's a former opera singer, and I've always loved opera, and so I love all that, the connection to that, of course, connected a lot with your travels with your husband when he was, you know, doing international kind of business, and you did a lot of traveling with him.
Oh, I did. I did. And by that time, my children were pretty well grown. I have four children, four grandchildren, one great-grandchild, and that I love and adore. And, by that time, I was pretty free to go with them or even go off on my own. But I was taking notes, you know, and being in a big international business, we traveled first class or private jet, or we stayed at the best hotels, you know. So I was able to put that into Emma's life. And she's not on the subway and going back to from Hoboken to 32nd Street. She's living the high life.
Well, I think I related a lot to your books too, because I at one point I was in that same situation where we traveled because of our business, and the same thing. You know, I just thinking about traveling today, it makes you shiver. You don't want to do it, but boy, we had fun in those days when we were traveling.
Oh my gosh, yes! Oh, it was wonderful.
Oh, the flights, when you look back on it, you know, people used to get dressed up to go flying. I mean, when we went to the airport, we got dressed up to go to the airport.
Absolutely. Get on the plane with a good suit and your, you know, maybe not your pearls.
But the service was so good.
No hassle, you know, you just got to the airport and you got on the plane, basically.
I know. I can't even. I remember one time, and we were flying out of Hamburg, and we were running late. We ran to the plane, and they were just about to close the door, and we just ran straight down the hallway, straight into the plane. You know, you can't do that today.
Well, you get arrested.
And of course, we didn't need masks.
No.
So that's one of the reasons I think I enjoy the Emma Street Mysteries so much. They take you back to a different time, and of course that's one of the fun things about what you guys do, what you great writers do. You take us back and you take us into a different world, and for a little while we're out of the world of sitting around with our masks on.
I think that's a very important aspect of life, and is to be able to and writing is to provide escape for people. As you're saying, something to take you out of whatever you're doing. Some of it maybe not so great, and lose yourself. I certainly benefited from that all my life.
Well, I think all of us readers do, and my sister was recently in the hospital, and she spent her time reading cozy mysteries and having so much fun. You know, she's in the hospital, but she kept saying, "Leave me alone! I'm reading this mystery by Carol J. Perry. Leave me alone!" You know, and that's what books can do, and that's why I'm so, when I talk to people, and I'm trying to get out more. You know, there was a long time where, oh, it was impossible to get out, but to talk to just groups of people and say, whoa, reading, first of all, just be a reader, because that makes you a richer person, a fuller person. You have something to talk about. And then, of course, try writing, because it's never too late.
No, it isn't.
And you certainly have proven that. It's amazing. I think it's just wonderful that, you know, we have this opportunity to talk to you. And my listeners, I get wonderful emails from my listeners. I know today I'm going to have so many wonderful emails from listeners who are listening to you now, and knowing that, you know, you can remember. You can remember presidents. You can remember. Do you remember when Truman was elected? Was that a surprise?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it was quite a shock when I mean, of course, none of us knew how sick FDR was. I mean, the public, the public, and I, we had no idea. So I think the shock was when he died, and nobody really knew who Truman was. But it was an interesting time, and yeah.
Well, it's amazing, and what you have managed to do, and I think your writing career, the first book was published, what year, I can't remember now, but in this time, I mean, just you've produced so much in really a short time period of time.
Yeah, because I didn't start until I was in my 50s, so that should give your readers who were at least around that age and hope to start, because and if I had to do it all over, I would take advantage of all the technology that's come up, you know, able to sort of build a great fan base and all the social networking that you can do now that when I started, you were just totally in the hands of your publisher. But it's easier to publish now too, I think, for people who are starting to write. Much easier. You've got many different ways to go.
Well, I just want to tell you, Jeannie, that you are an inspiration to me, to all of my listeners, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to play a song, of course, a birthday song for you. But you know, when you're back here next year, and we're celebrating, by then I hope the new book will be released. What's your deadline for this release?
Well, I'm hoping to finish it by the spring, and then, you know, it'll take a while to get it released, but hopefully. And Tim, I wish you lots and lots of good luck.
Oh, thank you very much. It's funny because I actually started writing when I was in my 50s as well, so I concur with your, it's never too late.
That's it. It's never too late. And so the new book, the name of the new book is going to be what?
Right now, temporary title probably, it's the Brave Ones, B-R-A-V-E, Brave Ones. Subtitle is Lovers and Spies in the American Revolution.
Ooh, I love it. That's intriguing. And, of course, Louisa is going to be another great, one of your great characters, like Emma and Sarah. And, again, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's always a joy to talk to you. And we'll keep in touch. And as soon as you have the book ready, you know, to go up online and people can start ordering it on a pre-release, I will start, announcing it all the time so that you'll get a lot of pre-release orders too, okay?
Thank you. You're a treasure. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to talk to you, and we'll be talking to you next year, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Here's a song for you. You can just listen for a minute, okay?
Yep.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest here in the studio. I love having guests here in the studio. Tim McGee, I'm trying to lift his book. It is 618 pages, and if you are on YouTube, you can see it. It's a big book. And wasn't that nice? I was so happy that we were playing that Red Cross message from Glenn Erickson. And there we are. Eugenia Lovett West was in World War II. A part of the Red Cross. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Doesn't that give hope for all of you out there? You're 99 years old and you're still writing. And I tell you, her book a year and a half ago, it's about cybercrime. And I mean, she did, you know, there are young people who don't know cybercrime. And she did this research and she wrote a really great book.
Wow.
You know, set around, it's a thriller, a wonderful thriller called Firewall.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So you've got a long career ahead of you, right?
Another 40 years,
Tim. Okay. Well, Tim McGee is here. And Tim McGee has written a book, a hefty book, and it's called Durkin's Journey. And I love it. The cover's beautiful.
Thank you.
The cover's beautiful. I know that you had a friend and an artist do it, and it's just perfect for the story. Wow, you had a journey yourself with this book.
I did. It was my first novel. I wrote it probably 10 years ago, right after I kind of exited from the rat race, as it were. And I knew when I finished it, it was actually a little bit longer than that. But I knew when I finished it that I wanted to do some tweaking on it. So I put it aside and then started working on Worthy McGuire. And about a year ago, I came back to it. It's dedicated to a very, very good friend of mine who I worked with in the corporate world. And he told me he was retiring after 35 years in December. And so I decided it's probably time to pick it up again and final edit and put it out there so he'd have something to do when he retired.
Wow. You know, when I read Worthy McGuire, I was so impressed. As a matter of fact, when I read it, I was in awe because you captured, for me, you know, with my father had been in D-Day, and so I was right away drawn to the subject. But Worthy is such a character that once you read about him, you never forget him. And I have a feeling that, as you said, you still talk to him once in a while, don't you?
I do.
I noticed on your Facebook you have actual conversations with Worthy McGuire.
I did during the pandemic. It was my way of trying to kind of calm things down and ask people to be reasonable at a time when everybody was highly stressed, and what would Worthy do here?
Yeah, what would Worthy do? And it's a good question. And so that's why that's a great reason to check out Tim's Facebook page because I found the dialogues that you have with Worthy to be so good. And again, this is the wonderful thing about a character like, I mean, he's a character, but he's real to me too. Mm-hmm. This is wonderful.
Thank you.
Now, in this case, with Durkin's journey, there's so many wonderful things in this book. And I brought today, and I was wearing all day. I went, as a matter of fact, I was in the, I went to Wawa's, and I was wearing my tiger's hat. Well, you know, I love your references to Detroit in here.
Thank you.
So we have the same feeling about the Tigers. We live in hope. The Pistons, I never really, you know, I'm not a basketball person. I don't know if we should go where the Lions. What are we going to do? What are we ever going to do with the Lions? People from Detroit really must have this optimistic attitude that we keep
showing up.
I mean, I don't care what other team. I still, for me, it's the Tigers and the Lions.
Yeah,
you
me
know.
Too.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I love your references to like Cobo Hall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I spent many evening there watching a concert or attending a basketball game.
So. Oh, yeah. A lot of concerts there. Wow, you have so much in this book. As you said, it's actually your first book,
mm-hmm.
At which you fine-tuned to perfection.
Yes.
I think it's fine-tuned to perfection because it is really good. I hate to give away anything. I actually don't want you to give away the part of it, the beginning part, which I opened the book. I didn't know what was going to happen. So I don't like to give away this really dramatic and exciting moment because it came to me as a complete surprise. And I want readers to read this book and to discover Durkin. The character, again, is wonderful. Tell the story, but don't tell that exciting part. I don't want,
okay.
I want people to find it because it sort of took my breath away. I couldn't believe it.
Well, it's a story about a guy who has been kind of cruising through his life, and he's more reactionary. And so the story is about how he is confronted in a very unique way to try and take more control of his life, to be more proactive. And Durkin's journey is about what happens when he does, when he takes more control both in his personal life as well as in his professional life. And oftentimes the outcome is good and sometimes the outcome is, not so good. But he's faced with being, it's his, he owns it. And that's kind of what he's faced with is he recognizes that there are times in his life when he's been all in, he's been very passionate about something, but it isn't consistent. And so he's faced with get more involved in your life, and the outcome is his, bad or good.
And, of course, he is a corporate man.
Yes.
And there are, you know, millions of corporate men out there, and now corporate women, but particularly at this point where a man started in a company and so much of life was centered around where he was going to go in that company.
Yeah.
It became... It took over his life, his family's life, trying to get that corner office, working your way up. And, of course, nowadays, young people sort of expect the corner office on day one. I mean, and they resent it if they don't get the corner office on day one.
Yeah,
it's also a unique study, I think, into the corporate world, into the American life,
mm-hmm.
That was based on that trajectory.
Yeah, it's when I was noodling about it and thinking about the story. He sits at the intersection of two worlds. He's in that corporate world. He has been in that rat race for a long time, and he's trying to climb that ladder. He's trying to grasp for that next job, and yet it can be very competitive. It can be very aggressive. It can be cutthroat and ruthless at times, but also a lot of positive outcome can as well. Yet Brian goes home every night, and he comes back to this beach community. It's based in Indian Rocks Beach.
No.
And so he has this two completely separate worlds where there are these really goal-oriented corporate people who are really striving for the next level. And then he comes home, and there's this eclectic collection of beach characters who, you know, they're not grasping for the next rung in the ladder. They're looking for the next beer. Now, and that's not a bad thing. And I try to draw the contrast and say they're different. And when he's faced with this kind of take control of your life, it affects both worlds. And as with all my books, there's a heavy influence of family and friends and relationships and how those impact them as well.
And one of the joys for me, of course, is reading it at Indian Rocks Beach, which is just down the road from me, and Bel Air. Mm-hmm. And it's true, people there are striving for that beer, or in my case, a margarita, and the sunset.
Yes.
The sunset and the beach. When you live here, when you live in this area, and you have these glorious sunsets, really at the point when you're looking at a glorious sunset and you have a margarita, or occasionally a pina colada, but with you, a beer, it is... You don't care about the corporate world.
No.
You really don't.
And I think at one of the points, he's thinking about one of his friends on the beach, and his friend, you know, tells him a really good night is when you're coming in at 4:30 in the morning, and you know, you're gonna get ready for that sunrise. And so, you know, Brian is faced with that. Then he had just walked away from a situation where he's making decisions about doing studies and market research involving millions of dollars, and that's as far away from a sunset as you can get.
Yeah, it is, and that's what's so much fun. I love the part about the corporate world. I loved the insights that you have because, of course, you were in that world for a long time.
Yes,
a long time, and then you get out, and then of course we have some. We will talk about the concert. Let us talk about why. What do you... I think we have a song. Big Ed, do we have a song laid up there just for Tim? Let's do the first one. Which one do you want? You pick, Ed. You pick. You surprise me. Okay, we have a song for you. Okay, let's go.
Cut grass and it's filling up my senses, and the sun is shining down on the blossoms in the avenue. There's a buzzing fly hanging around the bluebells and the daisies. There's a lot more love in you, but dim this world. Don't go, don't leave it lying out while the sun smiles. Stick around half a while, yeah. And I'll lie warm on the sand. Sandy beaches and my toes are submerged in the water and it feels good. The children playing, building castles on the shoreline like a painting that we loved and loved. It feels so fine. Don't go, don't hear that now. While the sun smiles, sit around, laugh a while, yeah.
Now, does that bring back memories?
Yeah. Hot House Flowers is hands down one of my favorite bands, and they're a small Irish band that I discovered, my wife being English, when we were a trip back to England, 30 years ago. And I just picked up their CD, and they were just
and
so
you
great.
Fell in love with
yeah.
them. And what they were talking about, toes in the snow, in the
yeah.
sand.
Yes.
It's just so perfect. And, of course, it plays a major part in the storyline here.
It
really
does.
It's an important part. And have you sent them the book?
I have not. It's an interesting... They were very popular in Ireland and in the UK. And
that's where I live, too. I lived there, and I was in Ireland many times. We used to go to Ireland all the time.
They would occasionally make trips over to the U.S., and they happened to be – they played in Philadelphia and New York, and A good friend of mine, actually the guy I dedicated the book to, he and I went to see them one night in Philadelphia. And it was just this intimate, small venue, and it was just great music. And so when I started writing the book, I said, Hot House Flowers, one of my favorite bands, I gotta put them in there. So
well, it's so perfect. Yeah. Really, they are just perfect. And they are a great band. I love them. And as you wrote about going to Ireland, Anybody who, I love Ireland. For me, that's my favorite accent. You know, people will all say, the French accent, or you want the French. Not for me. It was always the Irish accent. It just gets me. It's just wonderful, isn't it?
I agree. A good Irish accent, you can't beat it.
And the people are so great there.
Yes.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yes. Now, my wife as well, so I'll have to say something about Wales.
Oh, yeah. Well, I also went to Wales. But I love the Welsh. And as a matter of fact, I had a store in Wales. But, something special about Ireland. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when I was reading the book, right away I thought, oh, gee, I'd like a trip back. There is really, you think there isn't going to be so much to see, but there's so much to see.
Yeah.
And the people are so great.
And experience, yeah.
And, of course, you have Guinness. And yeah. I mean, there's so many wonderful things in this book. Set here in our area, and then all of the characters. You have a lot of characters.
Yes.
I think I recognize some of the characters.
Well,
I was going to say there's a few of the weirder ones.
It's interesting.
I mean, not weird.
It's interesting because when I started writing it, living in Indian Rocks Beach, and people found out I was writing a story about Indian Rocks Beach, they'd all ask me, am I in it? And I would say, yes, and you died horribly. But I was like, no, it's these characters are an amalgamation of people that I met on the beach, much like the characters in the corporate world. We're an amalgamation of people I worked with, and you can't pick out one person and go, well, he's so-and-so or she's so-and-so. But they represented kind of the spirit of both worlds.
Yeah, and you got it there. I think you really got it. It's I got a kick out of all the characters, and as I said, I also love the corporate side. I like learning about how the corporate mind works.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be a corporate person, I guess. I used to be, so it's wonderful, isn't it? Wonderful to be a writer, though, now. Then you can put it all down on paper.
And it's fiction, so.
It's fiction, so no, nobody can get you. The wonderful thing is that, you had the book there. It's a big book.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like a big book. It took me 2 days. I read fast, but still, it took me 2 days. But it was pure joy. I really didn't want to do anything else. I wasn't interested in anything else because I just got immersed, and it's really beautifully written.
Thank you. It was a labor of love at the time. And when I first wrote it, I knew I wanted to tweak it, and I used to joke with my wife. I had written it and I put it aside and I said, well, that's your legacy. I said, when I die, you're going to find that and you're going to publish it and make a lot of money. But I realized I wanted to get it out there.
Yeah, well, I think it's good that you publish it and that you got it out there and that you can then tell everybody about it and talk to people about it. And boy, it would make a great film. Believe me, listen, Hollywood. I am talking to Hollywood. More and more, I'm trying to get through to them because I have this whole bunch of books that I think are just perfect. And heaven knows they need something new because if they do one more Little Women, I'm going to go crazy. Please. And now they're doing another one. What is wrong with these people? Find some new original material. Find Durkin's Journey by Tim McGee, and then I'd also, Worthy McGuire. I see it as a film in my head. So, Tim, I know you have the Facebook page. It's
yes.
Tim McGee, author.
Yes.
Do you also have something else?
On Amazon.
On Amazon. That's it. Yeah. That's enough. This is his platform. And he's very relaxed about it. And you look now like a beach person.
Yeah.
He looks like a beach.
Yes.
He's got. You look great. It's just wonderful to have you here in the studio. I'm so glad we have people back in the studio. But people, get this book, Durkin's Journey by Tim McGee. It will take you out of yourself. You will smile. I tell you the verb. I won't even go there. I'm not going to tell anybody. You have to read it because it will take your breath away. In the first few pages, something happens that it blew my mind. And I will just say that a certain mode of transportation is not open to me anymore. I will never use that certain mode. But you have to read the book because it is fun. It is wonderful, beautifully written, really amazing, really amazing writing. It's a thrill. You know, this is what I do here on Joy on Paper. I love talking to authors. You know, this is what's great. You know, what I was able here to talk to Eugenia Levitt West. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have a book out today. You know, it's going to come out next year. But I want people to remember her. I want people to go back and get some of her books. Sarah's War is one of the nicest, most pleasant. It's about the Revolutionary War, and it really takes you into the war and makes you understand the characters and all of the patriots there and what they did that to create this country. It's really breathtaking. And you have done here something wonderful, and you've made Indian Rocks Beach famous now. But I think you should send it to the Hothouse Flowers, send them the book.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You have to send. What do you mean, good point? I'm always have good point. Yes. You have to send it to them. They will love it. And, you know, a book like this, a little blurby kind of thing, is great to get from them. And also, you know, get it up on social media. Start tweeting about it. If they'll get you give you a blurb for it, that'd be great, mm-hmm. because they should love it because you love them, and you know, and you have brought their music to life. Let's play that out. Everybody, remember One of the Joys of Life. On the way out, let's play the other song, okay? And everybody, I'm just saying, read to Mickey's book. One of the Joys of Life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And, well, we'll have an audible book of this, too. Anyway, everybody, have a great weekend. Let's play the last Hothouse song on our way out.
This is a good one.